All right, so we're going to finish up potassium channels today, and then we will move on to some ligand-gated channels after this. That could be a little confusing for people, the topic we're going to start with today, metabotropic-gated channels. What were metabotropic receptors? They started a second messenger cascade, and what was their physical characteristic? They're also called 7 transmembrane segment receptors. Okay, that's not even necessarily accurate, as we'll see when we get into some of them. Some of them form dimers. So they have 2 sets of the 7 transmembrane segments. But for now, these are all linked in some way to G proteins, and then via the G proteins to various enzyme systems. What were the 3 primary enzyme systems we talked about? Trick question. There's only 2 of them, actually. Adenylate cyclase and phospholipase C that start those cascades. Adenylate cyclase could either be inhibited or activated. How about phospholipase C? Did we have a pathway to inhibit that? So just a way to turn it on. Okay. So metabotropic gated channels are influenced by those second messenger cascades in some particular fashion, very often either by phosphorylation or dephosphorylation, or in the case of one of these channels, by the impact on levels of this particular molecule, ATP. So the potassium channels that are considered to be metabotropic gated include one that we've talked about several times now, one that generates the current IM, the muscarinic sensitive potassium channel. Okay. Again, I said it has a really confusing molecular biology name. Unless you're a molecular biologist, not necessarily really helpful to learn that at this point in time. Again, it was activated by small depolarization, so it would be a low voltage activated and relatively non-inactivating channel. Phosphorylation is what to the channel? Blocks it. Okay. There are some substances that will activate the channel. One is one that you may even ingest regularly. Caffeine. We'll look at some data related to that in just a moment. Another one is a substance known as retigabine. Both of those can activate the M current, IM. There are also blockers. Knowing that it's IM, the muscarinic sensitive one, not surprising that muscarinic agonists do something to it. In this particular case, they block the current. Activation of muscarinic receptors causes a decrease in the amount of current flowing through these channels. A synthetic substance called linopyridine has the same effects. Linopyridine. Again, that sort of sounded like something that might be used to make fluorine materials. Linopyridine. Okay. We have the ATP sensitive channels, IATP. Molecular biology name if you're interested. This is the only one of the metabotropic channels that is not also included in our list for calcium sensitivity. It's not voltage sensitive at all. When it's turned on, it's non-inactivating. It could be turned on by this particular compound that is actually marketed. Minoxidil. Minoxidil. Anybody know what the primary marketing strategy is for that drug? Male pattern baldness. Okay. not going to point out individuals in class, but it's a fairly common phenomenon. It's not restricted just to males, but it's more common in males. Minoxidil. Why am I talking about you? I didn't know I was. I don't think you suffer from it, that I could tell. Probably not within the required demographic there. There are other drugs that have similar effects as well. It's called the ATP-sensitive channel because ATP actually blocks it. When there's high levels of ATP, the activity of these channels is very low. As you use up ATP, these channels then become more active again. So when the cell, for instance, has been very active and used up the available stores of ATP, these channels help keep the membrane potential at rest or make it hyperpolarized so that the cell is less active and then perhaps able to build up more stores of ATP again. And finally, I lumped these two into one column here because we're going to talk more about them in just a moment. The AHP and slow AHP channels. AHP and slow AHP channels. And again, they're going to be on our list because they're extremely sensitive to calcium concentrations. So they'll be on our calcium-dependent channel list. They also are considered to be non-inactivating currents, or at least extremely slowly inactivated. The time courses that can be 10, 20 seconds or more under normal physiological conditions. Most channels to get long activation, even the non-inactivating ones, you have to artificially change the membrane potential. These are not sensitive to membrane potential directly, but they are very, very, very long duration currents when they're activated. Okay. Let's look at some of the things that influence the calcium-dependent channels. First, let's start with a molecule that we've talked about previously, calmodulin, shown here, another artist rendition of it. How many calcium ions does calmodulin bind?
Four
calcium ions. This artist was a little challenged for three-dimensionality. I've got one hiding back behind. Calmodulin, we've seen, has lots of different roles in neurons and in other cells. And in the case of the AHP channels, the ones that generate IAHP, it stays constitutively bound to the channel protein, even in the absence of calcium ions. It stays bound. It forms a dimer with the channel protein. And yet it's still able to bind calcium in that state. So it could bind one calcium ion, two calcium ions, three calcium ions, four calcium ions. It undergoes a conformational change each time it binds a calcium ion. Wraps itself a little tighter. So it gives a very good signal to this calcium-sensitive or calcium-dependent potassium channel how much calcium is present in its immediate vicinity. None, small amount, medium amount, high amount, by this constitutive binding to the channel. Channel protein structure is shown here in the small light green amino acids. And then this is a particular peptide toxin that can bind to the channel and block the channel opening itself. If this was a receptor, what kind of an antagonist would we call that kind of interaction? Competitive or non-competitive?
No, non-competitive. It blocks the ion channel, not the binding of other drugs to the protein. This isn't a receptor, though. This is an ion channel. So we don't technically use those terms, competitive and non-competitive. But as many non-competitive antagonists we'll be looking at over the next few weeks do, this particular peptide toxin blocks the function of the channel. Covers the opening up so that ions cannot pass through that pore through the center of this particular type of channel. The binding of tau modulin occurs on the intracellular face inside the membrane. The toxin binds on the extracellular face, the outside of the membrane. And we have the other of the metabotropic gated but also calcium sensitive types of channels. They're not mediated by calmodulin, but by a different calcium binding protein. From its name, where would you think you might find a lot of it in the brain?
Hippocampus.
Which is shown right here. Immunostaining of that particular protein. Cerebral cortex is up here above it. Notably, much less binding than in hippocampus, and particularly in the pyramidal cell regions in hippocampus, not in the granule cell regions. So it's fairly phenotypically specific to this class of channels. And hippocampal pyramidal neurons have an overabundance of these slow AHP channels compared to any other pyramidal neurons in the nervous system. They're specialized to be able to keep themselves hyperpolarized for extremely long periods of time. So we know the calcium channel, calcium binding protein involved. This is its structure. This artist was challenged to show the three calcium ions bound to it. Doesn't bind four, it binds three. So not quite the same range of sensitivity as calmodulin. But then again, you get a lot more of this protein expressed here than of calmodulin. So I think it makes up for it by numbers. The trouble is we don't yet know what the channel looks like. It has not yet been isolated, cloned, or sequenced. It's the last of the major types of ion channels that the molecular biologists have not caught up with yet. And yet it's one that is critical to normal function of neurons. There are several lab groups working intensively on this because they think this one might gain them a Nobel Prize. None of them have finished it. The money seems to be a motivator for some people too. And the recognition. Yeah, science is not quite as pure for many people as you might imagine. Being able to pay people and pay themselves and buy equipment and materials to do more experiments sometimes gets in the way of the purity of it.
Do you believe that doctors are over-medicating people as a, like, in the pharmacology center? Or do you not believe that it's really going on?
Probably not relevant to this particular slide, but... That's a good question. We could probably entertain that later on in the semester. Okay. Pharmaceutical companies are very driven by the money factor. And in fact, as we'll see, there will be some generic drugs that are very similar to one another in their effects, and yet a company will own a patent on one particular variety of that to give a brand name to it. And while they've got that patent, no one else can market it. And they will use advertising and every strategy known to modern marketing to try to drive people to use that particular drug. even though very often there will be an equally effective drug. It's not nearly as expensive, but is not as widely used. Okay? Since we don't know the channel protein structure, we can't grow antibodies to it. We can't do those kinds of experiments. So we don't know if this calcium sensor, calcium binding protein, stays constitutively bound to it. That's one of the techniques people are using to examine all the different types of proteins that hippocalcin binds to and see, hopefully, one of those will be the channel. Yes, sir?
How do we know that it's associated with this
other agent? Because if you eliminate hippocalcin, you don't get that current. Okay? That's pretty good control.
Okay.
So we think it's analogous to what calmodulin does for SK channels, but we don't know that for certain. Okay? And it generates these types of AHPs that persist for extremely long periods of time, tens of seconds. All right, so let's look formally first at the top, and then we'll talk about some of the data down below. For the four major types of calcium-dependent potassium channels, CD for calcium-dependent, KC for potassium channels. Again, one of them we've talked about a lot before, IM. It's been on how many of the four lists we've looked at? Is it on the rectifier list? No, three of the four. Okay. So we pretty much know everything about IM already. I did mention that it was sensitive to caffeine. So if we look at the native current that might be generated by a depolarizing pulse in the absence of caffeine, and then apply caffeine at different voltages as well, we can make much larger currents. So some of what you do with caffeine is not exciting your neurons, but in some cases, calming them down. Is caffeine a highly selective drug? Or is it a very wide-acting drug? We've looked at several effects of caffeine already. This is another one. We're going to look at more later through the semester. So sometimes caffeine does one thing for you, sometimes another thing. Depends on the state of multiple other systems. Okay. And again, it's blocked by phosphorylation. Then we have what is called IC. IC. Now the name that's unfortunately used so much in the literature is probably worth your while to remember. These are also called BK channels. The German group that discovered them first named them for a big conductance. They use the English big, but K for conductance in German. BK. To distinguish them from the AHP channels, which are called SK, for small conductance. BK channels are typically active. This isn't an action potential, but let's pretend for a minute that this was an action potential. Remember, if it comes back down, what's the major current that drives the action potential back down to the resting potential? IK. The other one that's active during that falling phase, if you've got enough calcium in, is IC. If you didn't get much calcium in, IC doesn't help repolarize. But almost always, if you fire an action potential, and there's plenty of calcium outside the neuron, you're going to get some calcium entry, and therefore activate these large conductance channels, which will help bring the membrane potential down to rest and probably somewhat below the resting potential and generate what is often called the fast after hyperpolarization, stuff that happens right after the cell stops firing.
It turns off very quickly, but it's fast inactivating. You want to turn it on without calcium? Use some drugs. None of these drugs again. Caffeine. And you have some calming effect on the nervous system. Or niflumate. Niflumate.
Okay, so that's IM and IC. Then we have the last two again. And I've spent most of the last 15 years looking at their functional properties. IHP and iSlowHP. And IHP, for molecular biology term, is called the SK channels. We know what that protein looks like. We know how the calcium sensing works. We know a lot of toxins that are directed at that particular type of channel. As opposed to the slow AHP channels that we don't know much about at all. We know a very few handful of facts. We don't know the protein. We know that it generates very long acting after hyperpolarizations. We know that it has a different calcium sensor, hypocalcin, not calmodulin. It's considered a non-inactivating current, just like IHP. And both of these are sensitive to phosphorylation. The one that people point to most often is the effects of PKA, protein kinase A, phosphorylation. Seems to be a very sensitive substrate for PKA. Now, what would increase PKA activity? What is PKA sensitive to? What is required to activate PKA? Cyclic AMP. So what would increase the amounts of cyclic AMP in a neuron? What kind of G protein would increase levels of GSs? Not GIs, not GOs, not GQ. Any type of neurotransmitter receptor coupled to GSs. Okay. Are there other kinds of kinases in neurons besides PKA? Literally thousands of them. We've talked about two others. What other types have we talked about? PKC, okay, what does it take to increase activity of PKC? PKC, diacylglycerol, and calcium and ATP. How do we end up with more diacylglycerol? By activating phospholipase C. Okay, and how would we get more calcium? IP3 receptors would be one good way. So again, phospholipase C pathways. So GQs or, not GIs, GOs. Okay. Somebody mentioned another one that involved calmodulin. What's the other kinase that we talked about that's activated by calmodulin? CAMK2. Okay, and what does it require to activate the calmodulin there?
Calcium.
Okay, so calcium could come from the IP3 pathway, right? Or it could come through voltage-dependent calcium channels. Or it could come through a flavor of glutamate receptor we haven't covered yet, but we'll soon, the NMDA receptor. So basically, any of the G protein pathways except for GI could phosphorylate these channels and reduce the AHPs. So pretty much every mechanism in the neuron can target these channels, and very often does. Again, when Nature devotes that much attention to something, that's usually a clue that it has some great functional significance. Now, one of the phenomena I've been interested in is the role that plasticity in these channels plays in learning and memory. A large number of different tasks now, we've seen repeatedly, different species, different tasks. As long as the hippocampus is required, these HPs get smaller when animals learn successfully. These channels are modulated. In fact, that modulation appears to be phosphorylation dependent. So these enzyme systems are playing an important role in learning and memory. And particularly the PKA pathway seems to be critical in many tasks. If you block that pathway, you prevent learning. Not in every task, because in some you can still get it with PKC or CAMK2. More recently, there's been some really interesting work going on up in New York at SUNY Downstate in Brooklyn, showing a variant of PKC called PK Gamma M. See, it's to play an important role not only in the learning process, but keeping these memories alive. Particular variant of PKC, the M variant. And gamma is one that is actually not necessarily membrane bound once it has been activated. It doesn't have to stay attached to the diacylglycerol once it's been activated. Mm-hmm. Another interesting feature of these AHP currents, both high HP and slow AHP, is that they're upmodulated as your brain gets older. You get larger AHPs, more channels open, more channels active, the older you get. And that tends to make it harder to learn new things. Not everyone's brain undergoes that degree of plasticity at the same rate. Some people maintain normal AHP plasticity to quite advanced ages. Some of you may already be experiencing some of these aging-related deficits right now. And again, our TAs are going to try to help you reverse some of that problem. But it's up to you to work really hard at it, too. Okay? Is everyone clear that phosphorylation has effects on three of the four of these? They're all considered metabotropic gated because they are affected by phosphorylation. But these are all also the only ones that are effectively modulated by calcium levels. IM, IC, IHP, and the slow AHP. And one of them is still a complete mystery what the protein is. Okay? Some of them are sensitive for activation by different drugs. The last two not. Then we have blockers. And this looks like a lot of information. It's not so bad if we break it down. We'll start first with the ones that generate IC, the VK channels. The one that helps repolarize the membrane if you get calcium in there and the action potential. This drug that we've looked at before, I made a barbecue joke about. Tetraethyl ammonium at very high concentrations, at millimolar concentrations, blocks VK channels, blocks IC. More specific blocker, much lower concentration required, a scorpion toxin called charybdotoxin. Charybdotoxin. Most of you have probably seen some of the recent history going on in Egypt, but the name there actually goes back to ancient Egyptian history. Anybody know what cherub was? At least the Greek translation of the Egyptian. It's the person that ferried you across the river.
Oh, Charon.
Charon. Mm-hmm.
I was thinking Corinthians. Yeah, I was thinking of that too.
Carrion beetles have that in their name, a number of different associations. Basically, it means death. Not a good substance. The death toxin. Charybdotoxin. Okay. There's a large number of others. Then we have drugs that affect IM. Again, it's muscarinic sensitive, so muscarin. Muscarin comes from these mushrooms. You see some bright orange mushroom, not suggested you eat it. Or minopyridine. Minopyridine. Then we have drugs that can block the SK channel. One is called apamin. I showed you how it binds over the ion channel previously. Comes from this source. From bee stings, bee venom. It's one of the most common peptides found in bee venom. Apamin. So if you want to do better on your next test and you're not allergic, maybe get stung by a bunch of bees. But you'd have to do it while you're studying as well as while you're taking the test.
Okay.
If I come in and find a large beehive in here during the next exam, I might be a little suspicious.
Compound we've done a lot of work with. It's actually a compound been known in Chinese medicine for literally millennia now, several thousand years. A compound called dequilinium. Dequilinium. Fairly small quaternary ammonium compound. Very effective at very small concentrations. And blocking SK channels. There's lots and lots of other types of drugs known for SK channels. What kind of calcium-dependent potassium channel is missing from this table? I-slow AHP. The SKs are the AHPs. We don't have any drugs yet known specific for the slow AHP channels. Yet. So you took the pharmacology at a good time. One less category of drugs to learn. We're starting to get some clues that we might be able to come up with some. And they'll probably be useful in isolating the protein. So it turns out some very small molecules, this is tetraethyl ammonium, takes very large quantities to block these channels. Some small molecules, anybody know what that one is? Probably not. That's what comes from muscarinic mushrooms. Active at slightly higher quantities, a thousandfold higher concentration. Other relatively small molecules, active at nanomolar concentrations. And most of the things that block these channels are very large. This isn't anywhere close to scale. Large peptides. This is the smallest of the peptides. This is charybdotoxin, and it's 43 amino acids. Most of them are much larger than that. So it's been a puzzle to try to figure out the relationship between molecular structure and what they do to these channels. It's not been intuitive at all. All right, this slide actually shows some data that we collected, and there's some similar data in your textbook looking at these AHP currents. Okay? When we're talking about these potassium currents, are they inward or outward currents? These are outward currents. These are not the odd, anomalous, or IQ or IH related currents. These are normal potassium currents, so they're outward. But when we look at the current, and going up. Scale are getting down here, but this is a current measure. The scale mark here is where the pulse that was used to activate the calcium current to generate these calcium-dependent potassium currents. So normally after a burst of action potentials, you get a strong hyperpolarization current, an outward current. And typically it has the IC component and the AHP components. In this case, we pharmacologically isolated out IM and the slow AHP. IC is a very fast inactivating one, while the AHP is a very slow inactivating current. If you apply norepinephrine and allow it, acting through norepinephrine receptors, to activate pKa and phosphorylate the AHP channels, then you're left only with the IC component of that outward current. This is looking at the same thing, larger magnification, higher amplification, the C component and the AHP component, and we've gotten rid of most of the slow of the AHP component. What's left is the slow AHP component. Could be completely eliminated in this experiment. We do the opposite. Instead of using norepinephrine, we apply tetraethyl ammonium in high concentration. We can block the C component, IC, and you're left just with the AHP component. So pharmacologically, we can manipulate the different types of calcium-dependent potassium currents. That's it for potassium channels. So how many potassium channels did we look at so far? Four different categories. Four different ones in the first category. One of those repeated in the second category. First category was voltage dependent. Second category was rectifying. Then we had the metabotropic dependent category. One of those had been voltage dependent, IM. Two of those show up in calcium dependent as well. And we looked at the calcium dependent category last. Four types of channels, including those that generate those very long after hyperpolarizations. How many types of calcium channels did we look at? L, T, N, P, Q, any more? R. How many types of sodium channels did we talk about? We really only talked about one. We now know there's probably seven or eight different ones, but they all act so similar, it's safe to stick with one right now. How many types of chloride channels did we talk about? Chloride. Yeah, we did. Right before we talked about potassium channels, we talked about chloride channels. Anybody remember? Thousands of types of chloride channels? Anybody remember a blocker for a chloride channel? Chlorotoxin. There, at least something got through. We talked about one type of chloride channel. So sodium channels and chloride channels are pretty simple. Potassium channels and calcium channels, not so simple. Potassium ions, it ends up, help determine whether the cell is at rest or not, and how long it can stay at rest. Sodium channels are what everybody learns about disrupting that restful state, causing action potentials. Calcium channels play a role in that too, and in determining how much calcium is inside the neuron. It has to get in there in the first place through those calcium channels. So as neuroscientists, you need to be able to think clearly about all of the above.
What was the ion we talked about that's usually used to study calcium channels?
Barium.
Okay. Why would we use barium instead of calcium? Doesn't affect the second messenger pathways in any way. Just generates the current, but it doesn't have any of the secondary consequences of the calcium entry. So you can isolate out just the pure membrane physiology from all the rest. Okay. I think that's more than enough to think about, or should we go on today? I think we'll quit for today.